The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles
in your soul. Right in your soul. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa, broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading. 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, we are your talk radio. And we're also streaming live all over the world at kcnrradio.com, kcnrradio.com. And if you have a question or a comment, the phone number is 530-605-4567. We have an action-packed program today. We have several guests coming on, and it's pretty amazing all the things that are coming on. 9:15, I believe, our new congressman, James Gallagher, will be calling in. But right now, we have the man of the hour, the one who's fighting for our Second Amendment rights. The one that's been going to court and fighting this battle, and we all need to help him now. Mark Baird. How you doing, buddy?
Every day's a blessing. How are you doing?
Good. I think. No one's hurt me yet.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, day's young, though, huh? So,
yeah.
We have a Second Amendment court case that we have. We have a fundraiser coming up, and I'll bring that up a little later in the program. Now, at this point, we've got a few minutes here. Is there anything else you can deliver on the court case since you went on June the 3rd?
Yeah, actually there is. There's a really important case. The opinion was issued by the Supreme Court yesterday or day before called the Wolford v. Lopez, and that was a Hawaii case where Hawaii, much like California, they demanded that even though you were carrying lawfully, which in Hawaii requires a permission slip, you could not enter any business or any private property without affirmative consent from the owner. In other words, if you went to go get gas, assumedly you'd have to park down the street, but then you couldn't walk into the gas station to ask the owner's permission because you're carrying to come into the gas station because you'd get arrested for walking in to ask his permission, you know. But and it's one of those deals where it was called the vampire rule, where you had to have, typically in American law, you have implied consent to do certain things in businesses and property, even though it's private property, where the public is assumed to be welcome. In other words, a store, a gas station, a church, libraries, things like that. But in Hawaii, they flipped that on its head, and they wanted you to have affirmative permission instead of implied permission prior to entry if you were exercising your Second Amendment guarantees. And arguably, I don't think permission is a Second Amendment guarantee, but that's a story for my case.
Yeah.
So Wolford came out, and the Supreme Court absolutely shredded them. And in doing that, they also shredded the state of California, because California tries to do much the same thing, where pretty much every place but the yellow line that runs down the middle of the road is a sensitive place. So the minute you are within 5,000 feet of this, 1,000 feet of that, a public park, public venue, a library, government buildings, this, that, churches, establishments that serve alcohol, establishments that serve food, you know, you can't go into any of those places carrying, which, of course, presents a tremendous amount of liability to you, because if you're putting your gun off, taking your gun out, putting your gun in, taking your gun out, well, what if someone sees you while you're transferring your gun from your, and then your guns in your car, where more guns are stolen out of cars than anywhere else in the world, and then you're liable for what happens with that gun because, of course, you left it in your car. I mean, this is the type of catch-22 that the state builds, hoping to make the Second Amendment such a pain in the rear end that no one will exercise Second Amendment guarantees. And that's what their hope is. And really, when Wolford came out, it did flip the Hawaii decision. That's absolutely unconstitutional. Justice Alito and Justice Barrett wrote the consents, and they just ripped them up. And then you have the Kagans, Sotomayors, and Justice Ketanji Jackson Brown, who's never even read the Constitution. And what they did was they relied on, they said, well, this isn't a Second Amendment case. It's a property rights case.
Wow.
So, you know, private property owners, which they do, they have the ability, a private property owner. I remember someone brought this up to me during the Wuhan. They went to a store, and the store had a sign that says, if you don't wear a mask, don't bother coming in because we'll shake you out. Well, look, if you own property, whether it's a store, a church, or whatever it is, if you own property, you have the absolute right to say who may come into your property and who may not come in. Of course, California takes exception with that, too, because you don't have that right if it's a protected class of people. They get to go anywhere they want.
Wow. You know, it gets goodier and goodier, doesn't it?
We'll pick you out. Yeah, so a property owner has that right, and you have two choices, either put on a mask or go spend your money somewhere else.
Right.
However, you don't have to go in and ask the property owner, oh, do I have to have a mask on? You know, in other words, if there's no sign, you just go in like you normally would.
Right.
And that's called implied consent. And so any place where the public is welcome, assuming you're doing business or doing whatever, you have the implied consent that you can go in whether you're wearing your underpants on backwards or have a gun under your shirt. And unless the property owner puts up a sign saying otherwise, then that implied consent rules. And even if the property owner puts up the sign, you can go in, and if he chooses to call you out, then he can, but if he doesn't choose to call you out, then he doesn't have to. And even if he does call you out because somehow he knows you're carrying your concealed weapon, and if he does, you're not concealed very well, then his only option is to ask you to leave. That's it. So it wasn't a big deal. It's never been a big deal, and never in the history of this nation has it been a big deal. But we got some really good language out of that case. For example, Barrett says, overwhelming evidence shows an enduring American tradition permitting public carry, which we interpret as open carry, because San Diego v. Peruta says that concealed carry is not a right. The states can do whatever they want with it. They can ban it, prohibit it, regulate it, make it as difficult as they want. They can make it as expensive as they want. And then San Diego v. Peruta, which is Ninth Circuit settled law, says if there is a right, it must be open carry. So San Diego v. Peruta doesn't say there's a Second Amendment right, but they do say if there is a right, it's open carry. And that's what my case attempts to prove. Yeah, I mean, you know, in California, the Ninth Circuit Court actually works for the state of California, and they work for the state of Hawaii, too, because they work for all the bent, blue, far-left, communist dictates. That's what they operate for. But it's very interesting, too, because California raised the 1865 law in Louisiana, and they tried to use it as precedent, where, you know, it was a black code, and it said that blacks can't carry openly on plantations or anywhere else. And they said, well, there's a historical tradition prohibiting open carry. Yes, if you were black, but and oddly enough, what was the Mulford Act? It was an attempt to remove the ability to carry from blacks. And so what the court said about that is that those laws, because they were racially motivated, are rejected, period, They cannot be used. They are of no value because they were racially motivated. Now, Ketanji Brown Jackson says, oddly enough, she's black. Well, yeah, they were racist, but they were historical laws. So we can use them, even though they were racist. But Ketanji never read the Constitution because if she had, she would realize that 3 years after the black codes, this little thing called the 14th Amendment was codified into the Constitution in order to nullify all the black codes and provide equal protection under the law.
I've got a question. How can discrimination, how can a law be a law if it doesn't follow the law of discrimination? How does that work?
Well, Ketanji says, even though it was discriminatory, it was still a law.
But it's
and so
discriminatory.
We can use it. Yeah, well, the point is the 14th Amendment nullified those codes, and the Supreme Court in McDonald, Heller, Bruin, Nunn v. Georgia, and several other cases absolutely rejects the logic that you can use racially motivated laws to restrict Second Amendment activity. Absolutely nullified them. You can't use them. You can't talk about them. They are of no value, no weight whatsoever, and yet, California used that in my case. They were looking for historical analogs to the prohibition of open carry, and the best they can do was an 1865 law in a parish in Louisiana banning black people from carrying guns. Well, although they did use the Mulford Act in order to ban black people from carrying guns, and that was in 1968. So if the black codes were of no value in Second Amendment jurisprudence, now, from 1865, I would think the 1968 law, which was a black code, would be nullified and of no value also. Boom, we win. That's it. I mean, and in addition to that, Justice Barrett said, after all, the very purpose of a Bill of Rights was to withdraw certain subjects from the vicissitudes of political controversy and to place them beyond the reach of majorities and public officials. And that was from a case called West Virginia Board of Education versus Barnett. So the point of the Bill of Rights, they are negative rights. Government shall make no law. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, and so on and so forth. They're negative rights. In other words, these are rights that are the interest balancing, so the state argues, well, interest balancing is okay, but Justice Thomas said that the Second Amendment is interest balancing itself. It is the balance of the rights of the people against the power of government to take those rights away. In other words, these rights are codified so that government will have no play in those rights. In other words, they're off the table, they're above policy, they're above government, they're above the right of any judge or any legislature or any government or any governor or any sheriff or any so on and so forth to meddle in. Those are rights that belong to the people as they were written, as they were understood at the time, and Justice Barrett said that to place them beyond the reach of majorities. In other words, the majority may never strip the rights of,
We're going to have to just wrap this portion up really quick. So call us back. I'll go ahead and give you the heads up when, but we've got Congressman James Gallagher just called in. So,
okay, all right, sounds good.
Okay. Congressman, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Terry. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How you doing? Congratulations again.
Doing good. Thank you, man.
Yep. So are you back in Washington, D.C. right now? Are you home? Or
I am home in the district in the great North State.
Great. So you've got a lot of things going on your plate. You're getting a lot of feedback, a lot of positive feedback from counties and boards of supervisors on your state split. Do you have anything new on that?
Yeah, so we're at seven counties now. That have all endorsed, you know, the state split resolution, AJR 23, that's in the state legislature right now in the rules committee. I think we're getting more and more folks that are expressing interest. I anticipate we'll see more counties, come on board. you know, I've had some good conversations with supervisors and also just interested people who want to push for it in their home county. So my hope is that we'll see maybe 4 to 5 more come, in the next couple weeks. And we just got to keep pushing for it. Like I said, I think that the big key thing here is just going to be continuing to show that, you know, groundswell of support. I mean, I think that's the only way that we really ultimately get there, and get the votes that we need, you know, both at the state level and in Congress.
Yeah, you know, I think that, I mean, and the idea, I know that we've talked about this for years and years and years, and the idea of state split is the only way we can get adequate representation. And as you said, I think didn't you write a paper on the state of Jefferson or something in college? Did you actually looked into this representation thing pretty deeply?
I don't know that I wrote a paper on it, but it's always been of interest to me. And just the idea of representation and what that really entails, and, you know, that our founders, you know, came up with a very beautiful system, in, you know, providing for a Senate and a U.S. House of Representatives. And that, you know, the Senate's job was to provide more equal representation of each state, right, regardless of population. And then the House of Representatives was going to be based on population. Well, you know, we lost that, you know, when we had Baker versus Carr and Reynolds versus Sims, that established that in, at least in state legislatures, both houses have to be based on population. And you know, you guys have probably been over this many times before, but that's created the problem we have here where, you know, when it's all based on population, LA and San Francisco have all the votes. They don't have to address our issues, and so they don't, right? And, you know, we've been in this situation for quite some time now where it's very difficult, you know, to get our issues across, to get the things that our people desire through the legislative process. And now it's even worse with Prop 50, where they've actually just taken it. Actually, now they want to say, hey, you don't get anybody to represent your area, right?
To your point, 11 counties that are contiguous in Northern California voted at almost 70% to reject Proposition 50 and vote no.
Absolutely.
Yet even if we added up all the votes we had in those 11 counties, they still wouldn't be able to outweigh basically an over 80% Democrat majority in Santa Clara County. We get wiped out by one county.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear what people want. You know, when you talk to people about wolves, you know, you think we should be having to, you know, coexist with wolves? You know, obviously we say no, hell no, right? And and we've seen the devastation that's caused, that, you know, basically Bay Area liberals and their ideology wins out. They take our water, you know, they, you know, take away what we need in farming, you know, to continue to grow crops that feed the world. They increase our costs beyond belief. And like, if we had it our way, none of those things would be the case, right? I mean, if it was truly a representative government of the people of, you know, this great North State, you know, which is an amazing place, it's a beautiful place. You got majestic mountains, valleys, industrious people, hardworking people, you know, who just want to live free. Yeah, and so, you know, this is where, you know, I've kind of redoubled this effort.
Sure.
And again, I can't do it alone.
Right.
But I'm opening up the pathway there. You know, what I've told people is, hey, I'm not guaranteeing it's going to happen, but I am guaranteeing that we have the conversation.
Yeah.
I am thinking it's very, very, relevant and pressing to have the conversation and get people organized and hopefully to push for what I think is really the only way to truly restore our ability to have adequate representation.
Yeah, you know, in Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution guarantees us a Republican form of government. We don't have that in California. And, you know, there's always been a lot of thought of whether or not the order is, I mean, you have to get the permission for a state split in Article 4, Section 3 from the legislative body of the said state and the Congress of the United States. The governor doesn't have to sign off. The president doesn't have to sign off. All that good stuff. But do you have to go in that order? is, I think one of the things that, and I don't, I kind of want to get your take a little bit on this. Two things, actually. The first thing is that you have a tremendous support group up here with all of us. We do a Zoom call every other Thursday, fourth Thursday. Is it the second?
Second and fourth.
Thank you, brother. And we do a Zoom call, and we have a lot of folks, a lot of wonderful moms and dads that are out there making calls to all the different counties, to the county clerks, to support your particular movement. We have, you know, New California, Old California, I Wish I Was Out of California, Is There California, all the Jefferson. We have all this stuff. But basically what you've done is you've gone out and done something historical as a congressman and stood up and standing up for the people's rights for representation, which Article 4, Section 4. And it's really been great. You have a lot of support. And I know one of the things that you have talked about is that the boundaries that you're looking at, a lot of that isn't set in concrete.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I'll start with that first step, and I think that's where most people go, man, how is that going to happen? How are you going to get the legislature to sign off and give consent? And I get that. I get why people, you know, feel that way. Obviously, you've got a legislature that, you know, never votes the right way on almost anything, right? And so, you know, how do we believe they're going to do that in this case? And that's where I say, well, that's why I think it starts with this groundswell of support. Right. And what I've said is, yeah, I obviously laid out the counties that would form the new state in my proposal. But there's a couple of things I've said is one is this is going to come down to the coalition of the willing. Like who really wants to be part of it? You know,
yeah, we got
and it may be that many of those counties
right.
don't. Right. Some of those counties right. may not. Right.
We've got to be careful about that phrase. Got to be careful about that phrase. That's what Ukraine's using. Did you know that?
Well, I did not know that.
No, I didn't either. You know, in fact, Lauren Kraft is the one who told me that on a conference call. I didn't know that, but I don't know.
Well, I'm not sure.
We'll
what
make it around.
Mean, I know what I mean.
You know what you mean. Yeah.
Hey,
I got you.
I don't think it has to necessarily. Since many people have asked me about the map, or you know, or hey, I think this county should be included or that. Like, look, it's not defined.
Right.
It's not that that's going to be the end all or be all. It's really about who. Who wants to do this? And that's where I think any conversation starts is
yes.
from these local governments up. Now, I'll say, look, I think we've had interest as far south as Kern County,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've got a lot of interest in the North State.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some Central Valley counties who are interested, right? But it's really going to come down to, like, yeah, who really ultimately decides, yes, we want to do this. And if you look at AGR 23, I have a provision there that also says, you know, and any other counties, maybe adjacent counties, right, who by a vote of their people decide they want to join, right? So I leave it open for, you know, maybe some of these counties who haven't been identified, right? But maybe their people say, yeah, we're really done with, you know, Gavin Newsom and the supermajority and the terrible governance of California ourselves. And as you know, there's a lot of different things aligning. There's, you know, your guys' initiative that you're working on. There's, you know, there's the Greater Idaho movement. You know, yes, we are not the only people in states who feel like we've been left behind. Obviously, people in Oregon feel the same way, Washington. And I just wonder if all this stuff comes together,
yeah.
right? And I think if we start working and we work in
right.
sync and we may let it be known that we want something
right.
better.
Right.
That's where I think it starts.
Well, I wanted to ask you, because see, the initiative that we put on there on CaliforniaStateSplit.com, folks can go to that, CaliforniaStateSplit.com, basically, we've looked at, you know, you really are steering the ship on this. And right now, the four-state split is really for you to peruse and decide maybe it's two states, maybe it's three states. Maybe it's four states, but maybe even if it is two states, I think the idea of getting behind someone, folks, who represents us in the United States government, by the way, congratulations again. We're so excited about that, James. Because we have somebody now who actually will champion us in the state. So I think that what we're looking at with the four states, just for your information, is pretty much you know, steer the ship. And, you know, that is there for, you know, advisory to you and maybe some things you can look at all of that. Also, you know, the position of being able to have people in the Coalition of the Willing to go somewhere. You may, like Kern County, that may be a little bit too far from where we are up here, and maybe that would be better as a Central California state or something like that. But the thing that's cool about this is that really, you know, you're quarterbacking the team, all right? So, you know, we're going to run the ball, throw the ball, you know, is it cover two? We have to look at all this
right.
stuff, and I think that, you know, I think that this is kind of a fun thing. So I want you to know that the people of at least up around here of Jefferson, you have our support. If we can all get behind one thing, that would be the smartest. What do you think?
Well, hey, you know me, man, and I like to try and bring people together and try and get wins, you know, and I think even being the minority in California, I was able to do that on different fronts, and so, and I like taking on, you know, big challenges, and this is certainly one of them, right? But it's so needed, right? And so I want to, you know, look at that game plan. I actually, you know, I mean, I like a lot of what you have laid out there. It makes sense to me, right, in terms of those four different states, right, and that, you know, when you look at California, it's always looked like, hey, it's not a, you know, it just is no longer what it was in, you know, 1850.
Oh, right? Man. Or 1950.
it's very much changed.
Mm-hmm.
And look, and they and different parts of California, they very much have their own culture.
Sure.
You know, their own walks of life, their
sure.
own industries. And so, yeah, and that's why I am leaving this, you know, more open-ended to see, like, hey, where do we go? I'll tell you the thing I do like about Kern is, hey, think about this, man. All the water,
mm-hmm.
all of the food, all of the power and energy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and finally we're free to actually use it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And finally we're actually free to actually use that. Imagine what our gas prices would be.
Yeah.
I think it would be amazing. So, like, you know, I just want to continue to work with people who are interested in doing this, you know, build the coalition and try and get this across the finish line. And it's been tried many times before, as we know, you know, and I would love to see it actually come to a successful end, but it's going to take everybody kind of working together, trying to synchronize our efforts as best as possible. And have these conversations.
Yes.
You know, have these conversations. Hey, how's this working? How's it working out for you being a part of California? Because I get that sometimes people say, well, you know, can we really pull away? Can we really be viable separate from California? I mean, we're not viable being part of them. Not long term, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and
absolutely.
And with everything that they do to us and the cost they, yep. you know, put on our people and, you know, I just think that there is something better and our founders did exactly that. They said, we don't want to be under a king anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to do something different. And they put it all together. And you know what? There was a lot of people who had different ideas and different concepts of how they wanted to go about it. But they came together. They mapped out a game plan. They stood together. And they ultimately got their republic.
I agree. Yep. I mean, 1,000,000%. You're absolutely correct. And that's kind of what we're doing here. And I think, you know, seven counties have supported AJR 23, and also...
yeah, we're off to a good start there.
We are. And you know, Congressman, the thing is that it really looks like people can pull together. And you've got a bunch of different things you can work with. You have the opportunity to look at the four-state split. You have the opportunity to look at what New California is doing, what the state of Jefferson looks like, and pull it together and give us the best game plan, because basically that's it. You know, again, it's the game plan, but I think everybody would buy into something. I mean, this is the first time in history we've actually had a sitting congressman that's talking about this stuff, but not only talking about it, but did something about it. So, I mean, it's pretty exciting to all of us that want liberty.
And to your point earlier, Terry, like, you know, my reading of the Constitution there is not that one has to happen first.
Right on.
You have to have both.
Right on.
You know, you do have to have, you know, both, you know, consent of the state legislatures and of the U.S. Congress, but it doesn't mean that one couldn't happen in front of the other. And so, you know, I've started to have conversations here at the federal level.
Nice.
You know, I think the concerns that you run into in the U.S. Congress is going to be, well, hey, if we have another state, that's two senators, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, on either side of the aisle, they might be concerned about that, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have your own, and like, hey, does California need more of a voice, right? And I try to go explain, well, you know, this is a different type of California than I think you're used to, folks. You know, like, there's a whole other part of California that you just don't hear about, right? And so, you know, having those kind of conversations, and look, having the majority and having a president who certainly is willing to buck the status quo, you know, there could be a real opportunity. Again, there's a lot of different dynamics going on right now that, you know, could help us in our mission.
Sure, sure. You know, with the president, we do have Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, where we as the states gave immigration, naturalization, the power of that to the federal government. We gave them that. We delegated that power to them.
Right.
And Title 8, Code Section 1324, of the United States Code specifically states that harboring and shielding illegals is a crime. Well, I'm surprised that the president or the attorney general of the United States hasn't said something about that. I'm not saying that it's not behind the scenes, but, you know, sanctuary states, sanctuary cities, and sanctuary counties are not only unconstitutional, but they violate Title 8, Code Section 1324. What say you?
Oh, well, you definitely have, I think you're seeing some pretty aggressive movements by the administration. You have the U.S. attorneys, you know, right now going after sanctuary state policy and saying, hey, look, this federal law trumps over that. And, we want our, law enforcement to work with the federal government who has preeminent authority over immigration,
mm-hmm.
right? And so... And I think the other thing to think about here, and that occurs to me, is you're already hearing Democrats who are saying, if we get the power, if we get the House, right, if we get the Senate, right, they want to move. Guess what they're planning? They want to make Puerto Rico a state.
Yeah.
They want to make Washington D.C. a state.
Right.
They may very well just blow up the filibuster, right, and then pass through whatever they want. And so we have to really think about, like, hey, what are these guys going to do, right? And so while we have a majority and really a mandate, you know, to do things at the federal level, we should use that power. I mean, voter ID is the biggest one, Save America Act. Like,
yep.
Let's get that thing passed,
yep.
You know? And there's a variety of ways we could do it.
Right.
And I was like, hey, let's get it done, you know, and because it's about the integrity, again, of our representation. We elect representatives, and we need to make sure that people that are voting in these elections are actually citizens, you know, are actually people who are eligible to vote. And, you know, I mean, it's a no-brainer. I know I'm preaching to the choir here. But,
oh, no, the folks.
You know, these are things that we just need to get done.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Because we know what may be coming if by chance, and I don't think we are. I think we're going to fight hard. But if we were to lose a majority in the House, we know what they'll do.
Yes, sir. I know what they'll do. The thing is, you know, we talk about Washington, D.C., but you'd have to amend the Constitution. You'd have to amend Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, because we as the states gave 10 square miles to the federal government, to the seat of government. So you'd have to move, if you have Washington, D.C. as becoming a state, you'd have to move the location and everything of the seat of the federal government. And, they can't even exceed 10 square miles, according to the Constitution. So
you're assuming they're going to follow the Constitution.
Well, I mean, the point is they'd have to amend it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. But you still got to get the states to approve the amendment.
Correct.
Yeah, I think there'd be a lot of problems with them doing that.
Yeah. Puerto Rico, not so much.
I
Not so much.
But I want to say, that we've seen it even from some very prominent Democrats that they would push to do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Well, listen, thank you for everything. And again, folks, and that's something that I just really want you to, take this with you, my friend. And that is that a lot of people that are in a lot of different movements about California, this could be the uniter of everything. I mean, you could be the frickin' George Washington of this, buddy, because everybody could unite around something that a congressman does, and people are willing to work together. And the thing I love about what you're doing is your flexibility in trying to come up with a playbook for us and trying to come up with the plays to win the Super Bowl, and that's what we need to do.
Yeah. Well, let's get as many counties on board as possible. I think that's kind of the key first step.
Yes, sir.
Let's keep working on that. And, yeah, man, I'm happy to serve as a uniter, And that's kind of, again, I feel like that's what I've done a lot in my career is really bring people together to try and get results. And, now I'm in this new role, and I don't want to, waste the opportunity to continue to do that on multiple fronts. So, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, my friend. God bless you.
Great to be with you. God bless you.
All right, pal. Talk to you later. So, Congressman James Gallagher, pretty exciting. He's been amazing here. We have Richard on the line. And, Mark, we'd love to have you call back in and weigh in on what the congressman said right after Richard is done here. Richard, what say you, sir? Richard, are you there?
Hello there.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
How's it going?
Did you get a chance to hear the congressman?
Yes.
Good. Go ahead.
Yes, I did. So I think you wanted me to call in just on a Measure B update, I believe.
Sure. Yes.
So, everybody's already heard the news. The appellate court denied Bonta's petition because, Bonta apparently he was in the Burger King line and he asked for a Big Mac. So they told him, you need to come back. You're in the wrong place, dude. So I don't know if that's incompetence or if Bonta did that with intentionality to really crunch the timeline. Because remember, Bonta's suit, he wanted this resolution by, I think it was August 24th. And still trying to figure out what the significance of that particular date is in relation to the upcoming November election and putting Measure B in practice. But nonetheless, so we're expecting another suit to be filed imminently and in the Shasta County Superior Court. So that would be interesting. Ought to be a little boost to the economy with the satellite trucks coming up, you know what I mean? And it's going to put, the nation is watching Shasta for a few years now, and we're hitting the reset button, and so it's going to be interesting. There's going to be some very unique court of public opinion pressure, and I hope Hannah doesn't get this case, although no promises
there,
right?
Good luck, buddy. Good luck on that one.
Yeah, I know. We'll see what happens. And I'll tell you something else that just happened. It's a public document, so I can speak about it. What's called the tentative ruling sheet that the Superior Court puts out. So basically, the week before the next week's calendar, the court puts out a tentative ruling sheet. And it basically says, here's their likely decision for the next week's cases. So for the Caskey case, where Alexander Habibush has requested $123,000 in attorney's fees, Mr. Hanna has continued that case till August 31st. And in general, he basically said, the attorney general's case was denied, but it's going to get refiled. And depending on the outcome of the Measure B trial, that's going to happen here locally, yada, yada. He just conflates a bunch of stuff. So very politically... It's a very political move Hannah just made. Very political. There was nothing legal about it. Although maybe he's allowed to do it. Doesn't mean he should have done it. Because the AG Bonta's pending case, I say pending, in the Caskey case, two separate matters, period. They have separate, you know, they're going to have separate case numbers, for gosh sakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my friend, thank you for busting your butt like you do. And, yeah, you know, we know, Wynn and I know firsthand, as does Mark Baird, what it's like to be on a case like this. We did it for 7 years, and they're not cheap. So you're having a fundraiser. Yeah. Would you like to bring that up?
Yeah, we're on short notice, about 3.5 weeks, July 24th, Anderson VFW Hall. It's a vote for Measure B fundraiser that is to help pay our attorney fees. Why? Because the county is refusing to defend the vote of the people, 56% of which voted to implement Measure B. So now we citizens, the proponents and others, are having to do this ourselves. And it's egregious and shameful. Vote for B, vote F-O-R, letter B, voteforb.com. That's how you find out some more information. We're still collecting items for auction and raffle. Of course, we'll take cash, but right now we just need to sell the tables, $250 for a table of eight or $40 for a single ticket. On that website, you can buy everything, donate everything, get a hold of us. We will come and pick up your items that you wish to donate for auction. And, boy, I'm telling you, Terry, I went around yesterday for several hours talking to businesses regarding this Measure B, and they are not happy. They're not happy with the board for not defending, and they're not happy with the state for fighting us. So a lot of unhappy campers out there right now, Terry. And,
Rich, when you say the state is not supporting, or the county is not supporting it, who in the county is not supporting?
Board of Supervisors voted to not defend Measure B. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. No, I just wanted to make sure that we're clear on that. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of
so thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right,
yeah, thank you. So appreciate it. And then we're certainly going to help support Mark Baird's fundraiser immediately afterwards.
100%.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you again.
Thank you,
Thanks,
brother.
Rich.
Lori. How are you, Lori?
Hey, really good, you guys.
Okay.
I just wanted to chime in on kind of what Mark Baird was following up about the constitutional rights. There's a global film premiere this Tuesday called Duty to Disobey. And we have a lot of military veterans here in our community, here in the North State. So I just want to give that heads up with a website. And if they want to get tickets, I know they're screening in Red Bluff. I don't know why we didn't get a screening here in Redding. That's unusual. But the site that people can check this out is dutytodisobeyfilm.com. And, again, it premieres Tuesday the 30th. People can pre-order a DVD if they want. I'm hoping we can get a local screening at a very friendly location in the near future because it's sometimes worthwhile to have a group setting for this. But this is basically it's unlawful to mandate these vaccines, quote-unquote, COVID-19 ones, when the product wasn't available. That was what they were intending. So a lot of these military people either got sick, were discharged, lost their benefits, and those that refused were terminated. And so there's a lot unfolding. Our soldiers are not lab rats, and it's just basically Austin was mandating it, and you can't tell or make an illegal mandate. So it's kind of like what's going on here with all these other constitutional things going on. If we can't protect the constitutional rights of our military men and women, then we have a danger for all of us.
Okay, Laura, you want to go ahead and give us that time and date again?
Yeah, it's Tuesday the 30th. It's the premiere, and it's called dutytodisobeyfilm.com. That is the website if you want more information to read about it, access either tickets. I don't even know if they're sold out in Red Bluff, but you can buy the DVD if you still have a DVD player. I have a portable one somewhere. And so that's one way. The other way is to watch I think it's a 20-minute interview about it at C like cat, H like Henry, D like dog .tv, and that's Polly Tommy interviewing Nick Cooper, K-U-P-P-E-R,
okay.
State representative, and that is how you can watch a good 20 minutes of it, and you'll be horrified. The lies, the deceit,
yeah.
And anyway, that's just something I hold near and dear to my heart. I've never been in the military. I've known plenty of people who have,
right.
And this is all coming undone.
Right.
So thanks for taking my announcement call on that. That film.
All right. Thank you, hon. Have a great day.
Yep, you too, you guys. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, we also want to mention the two-way fundraisers, the Legal Fund to Restore the Second Amendment Rights and Open Carry in California. It's a fundraiser dinner and live auction. It's going to be held Friday, August 21st at AMW Hall at 3210 West Center Street in Anderson. The doors open at 4, dinner begins at 6, and barbecue is going to be provided by John Knight and some fellow patriots there. They always do a great job. The featured speaker is Mark Baird, and he's going to talk about all things encompassing the two-way case, and maybe not all things because that would last forever, but he's going to talk about it and give you some insight and maybe even answer some questions and whatnot. The tickets are $40 each or $250 for a table of eight. Again, $40 each or $250 for a table of eight. And you can purchase tickets at Jones Fort. You can also contact others for more information. You can call Terry Raposa at 246-9706. Again, 246-9706. If Sally answers, give her the information. You guys will get it all figured out. Also, you can contact Linda Kent at 221-0101. Again, Linda Kent at 221-0101. And if you're not able to make it or you're going to be out of town or what have you during that time period, you can also send a check as a donation any size to Pecan, P-E-C-A-N, again, P-E-C-A-N, at 1304 East Street, Suite 110, Reading, 96001. Again, that's Pecan, 1304 East Street, Suite 110, Reading, 96001. And when you make out the check, write Pecan to the pay to the order of, and then in the memo portion at the lower left, just put 2A, and that should do it.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Mark, we have 8 minutes. Give us your take on what James said.
Well, I totally agree with James. I mean, first of all, the Constitution doesn't say what order it was done in. Second of all, in all of the state splits in the history of this nation, no one exactly followed the rules of getting the state legislature to agree and then getting Congress to agree. In fact, California came the closest in 1861, the PICO Act, and that was signed by the governor. It passed the legislature, passed the state senate, signed by Governor Walker, went back to Congress for approval to split California. Everyone agreed on it. Everyone voted on it. They all approved it, and then the Civil War started, and Congress never acted on it. So we actually came closest to following the Article 4, Section 3 procedure of anybody. But there have been popular votes that have pushed counties into state split that missed the boat. For example, West Virginia v. Virginia, one county that was east of the Alleghenies actually gained entrance into West Virginia after the fact, well after the Civil War was over, just by a popular vote, and the Supreme Court agreed that because they were under the point of a bayonet at the time, they weren't in a position to leave Virginia, but they granted them an exit after the fact. In Oklahoma, the Indian Territories joined Oklahoma as a state by popular vote. I mean, so there are all kinds of ways of doing this, and what it's going to end up being is whether the Supreme Court agrees with what we end up doing, because we can't follow the rules here. We have a monoparty. They're never going to vote to let us go. So we're going to have to get Congress to agree first. We're going to have to invoke some alternate procedure, and James is right about that. And we can do that. It has been done before. We're not breaking new trail. And just by the way, just to add fuel to the fire of why we need to do this, the water rights owners in Siskiyou County just received letters to cease and desist all surface or subsurface water use under threat of fines, hefty fines, by the way, and daily fines, unless you agree voluntarily to join a program with the water board. Huh. How does that sound to you? So you go into the gas station, and the guy says, you're not going to get any gas, and by the way, I'm going to fine you $25,000 and $10,000 a day for asking for gas unless you volunteer to give me access to your wallet anytime I want it.
How can they get away with open extortion like that? I don't understand.
How can they get away with that? Let's see. How can they get away with that? Because they own the courts. They own the legislatures. The union owns the state. The state is so far in debt that it's a ship sinking with all hands on board, and they don't care what happens to you. They don't care what happens to us. They're going to do whatever they want. They tyrannize people every day and get away with it. That's how.
Did you say a ship sinking or another another word, stinking?
He said a boat.
Yeah.
He said a boat.
Yeah, okay, it was ship. Okay, I just, because he didn't hit the button. But it was ship sinking.
It is the debt ship sinking with all hands on board.
Yeah.
And there is a lifeboat. There is a lifeboat. It's called Jefferson. Yeah. It'll hold everybody that wants to get in the lifeboat, and we can sail away from that and start to do better and have adequate representation and have liberty guaranteed through a constitution that has teeth and is very hard to change. I mean, the California Constitution itself prevents all this stuff, but they just ignore it. Hell, they've never even read it. So, yeah. In fact, they've never even read the United States Constitution. There are two Supreme Court justices that I can think of that have never read the United States Constitution.
Yet they took an oath.
They say the things they say. Oh, sure, they take an oath, but it means nothing to them.
It means nothing to them, exactly.
Yeah, and it means nothing to Gavin Newsom, who he and his wife are busy stealing money out of your pocket as fast as they can, knowing that he's termed out and he won't be able to steal money. He won't be able to milk the cow that he doesn't own anymore.
Right.
You know, folks, again, I think that we need to understand that what Mark's doing with the Second Amendment protects all the rest. And
absolutely.
It is the most important case in the United States right now.
Look, if we don't protect our rights,
right on.
What can we protect?
Right on.
I mean, if the Bill of Rights, which supposedly automatically protects all our rights, if that fails to do the job and we don't stop that, what will we stop?
Yes, and if you're listening to this, share this program with everybody you know. You know, you can go to KCNR, and you can go right to it. You can find it on the archive. We archive 5 minutes after we're done, so you can get that archive right away. Share it with your friends.
Enemies.
And share it with everybody. I mean, stop and think about it. You probably had the two... I would say that probably the two most important men for the state of California right now, that would be James Gallagher for state split
and Mark Baird,
protecting that right to do that.
Right.
I mean, you got to understand, this is impactful stuff.
It's a big deal, boys and girls. It's a
big
deal
because we have to keep standing. And, Mark, you said something that really changed the dynamic of the way a lot of people think. We used to say, you will not, you shall not comply. And Mark one day said, no, wait a second here. We will not, we shall not submit. You don't comply with tyranny, you submit to tyranny.
Submit,
and that's what we have.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you're either a subject or you're a citizen, and it's your choice.
I choose citizenry every day.
Mark.
I do too.
Thank you. Thank you so much for all you do. And let's support Mark Baird. You have my number, 530-246-9706. To where you can, and Linda Kent's number,
530-221-0101. There you go.
And, you know, let's get this thing done. Let's support this man. He's winning. We have a lot of things happening in history right now. It's time to pay attention.
That's right.
Mark, thank you, brother, for everything you do. And thanks, Cindy. You guys are an amazing couple. I know you couldn't do it without her, the support that she gives you. And not only that, but she's, she's a heck of a lot of fun, that lady.
Yes, she is. A sweetheart.
So anyway, and same thing to you, Sally, darling. You are amazing. Absolutely amazing what you do. Let's get this shared. I know you will, honey. So, Mark, thanks again, brother.
All right. Thank you. Time has come.
For 51.
We need to get it done.
Amen.
Second try. Maybe we've been living eyes half open. Maybe we'll bend them.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.